The OTB Podcast Network with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.
Keith Wood, you were on live commentary duty for News Talk and for Off the Ball throughout Saturday afternoon. Having had a couple of days to digest that, are you feeling more positive or more negative about life?
Maybe a little bit more negative. I was very positive for the performance, for the manner in which the team played. I thought they hit a goal consistently. They mixed the game up incredibly well. They played territory at times when they should have. Keith Earls was on fire. Damian D'Alende in the first half was fantastic, as was Conor Murray. Gavin Coombs was excellent throughout. I thought there was an awful lot to like for the manner and how they played. I didn't enjoy the game watching it because I felt as if we were on the cusp of falling over three or four times. And Toulouse are pretty extraordinary, I have to say. They have great strength and depth. But in 9 and 10, they had two guys who pretty much controlled an awful lot of the game. But they had talent everywhere, you know. And so it made it incredibly difficult for Munster. Toulouse's reaction after the game was extraordinary. It was as if this was a monkey off their back. They considered the Munster scalp to be a huge one and were thrilled with it. But I was disappointed at the very end because I thought Munster were still well in the game, but the second half wasn't good enough, really.
When it comes to that situation in that second half, what is it, about 60 minutes in and the game is really in the balance, Keith, what do you expect to see from Munster to ensure that the 50-50 start going their way and that they do get over the line in that situation?
Yeah, I'm maybe not going to answer that question, actually. I think it's almost like a different view. for Munster to fully be able to compete at this, you know, when you looked at the quality that came off the Toulouse bench, you can't be waiting for the last 20 minutes. You need to take whatever opportunity that you have at hand. And I still felt that for a lot of the game, when Munster got just outside the 22, they kicked the ball away, you know, or they shooed overlap opportunities. And, like, you need to be able to take all of them at that level. And that just didn't happen. And for me, an awful lot of that comes down to the fact that that's not how Munster have played for most of the season. So most of the season, they've played hard-driving maul, one-out runners, kicking game, and that has been more than good enough to beat some of the poor quality of opposition that there is in the Pro 14. When you get to the big games, you need to do an awful lot more. So I kind of look at the last 2 weeks as a view of the season. So playing against Leinster, and Leinster, you know, being the far better side at the present moment in time, but Munster didn't fire a shot. They did fire a shot at the weekend. So I was happier that they didn't kind of curl into a ball. And they were thereabouts. And it's about maybe playing that style far more often during the year so that you're able to do it on those big days, because the other ones are efficient. Pro 14 is poor. And the manner of Munster can win most of those games, as they showed this year, and they can do it. But that style of rugby isn't good enough to get you over some of these big European teams.
So that's objective number one, I presume, from your perspective, looking at the Rainbow Cup and looking at the start of next season, that this coaching ticket need to get the positives from that Toulouse performance and do it week in, week out, when the games seem a little more meaningless.
Well, I think so. And it becomes very hard. I mean, I was listening to Johan van Graan, and I didn't like what he said after the Leinster game. He said, look, Leinster are just almost impossible to beat at the moment. Well, then you have to play very differently than we have been, because that needs to happen. He came out after this game and was very supportive of his team and his players and how they played, as he should be, because I have to say there were times in that game when it looked like Toulouse could have run away with it, and they are a pretty phenomenal team. So, you know, I think the positives that you take from it are you have to try and have a style that suits the players that you have. And I think he would have said that. He would say that consistently, that these are maybe some of the skills aren't quite at the level that you'd want. Well, then we need to improve those skills pretty rapidly, because we can't go down the line of, I would say, playing a South African style of rugby, because we don't have the size of players to do that. So that doesn't suit us, and definitely doesn't suit us at the moment.
Except if they bring in those types of players, and bringing in someone like Jason Jenkins, does that then signal a worry for you, Keith, that this is the way that Munster perhaps want to play as the years go by?
It absolutely does. I can understand the rationale, and I said this the other day, you can have a rationale to pick a whole variety of different players to come in. But the idea is for Munster, for the most part, to be comprised of Munster players, and that hasn't been the case. So I think it's very hard to just criticise a coach, because a coach is inside doing his job. This is what he has to do for a period of time, and his reputation is built on the success that he has afterwards. And of course, there'll be a legacy element to it, and after he's gone, or whenever he's gone, and of all the things that he has done within there. But for me, it feels like a structural problem for Munster, not a head coach problem. It's a need of having someone to hold the keys for Munster rugby in itself, so that you end up having a head coach that delivers for what the director of rugby wants, which has to have a big legacy for the game going forward. And I look at Munster, and they're infuriating and exciting beyond all belief. The ability to punch above their weight is pretty phenomenal. But Munster is built on three stools, three legs of a stool, which was the schools, the clubs, and the Munster professional game. Well, the clubs and the schools don't interact properly, and they don't interact with Munster. There needs to be some level of coordinated agreement between all of those, a summit, if you want, to try and bring them all together to say, what do you want to get for each, and what do you want to get for Munster Rugby, and to see how that works, because it hasn't worked. Because with the club game in particular being marginalised, that was the route for a huge amount of Munster players of the past to come through. So we often bemoan the fact that Leinster have all the great schools and all the players that are coming through. That's fine, but that's Leinster. That's a capital city. That will always be the case going forward, I would say. Munster need a Munster solution for a Munster problem. Need to be far more joined up between the clubs, the schools and Munster.
Keith, just on that and the structural development, I was reading Brendan Fanning in the Sunday Independent, and he was saying, and I quote, if there were €600,000, for example, to replace CJ Stander with Peter Steffi-Trois, revised downwards to roughly half that for Jason Jenkins, why was there not enough cash to bump up the number of regional development officers in unproductive areas of the province? It's hard not to see sense in some of what Brendan is saying there.
Well, it is, and that's something that Munster will have to answer. So I think that's a good question to ask. When you look at Peter Steffi-Trois, I think that's a slightly different example, actually. So if you're looking for world-class players, Munster have always had guys that have been world-class, and either they're world-class in world rugby or have a world-class attitude. I'd go back to my day with John Langford. He had the best attitude of any trainer I've ever seen in my life. And he had the best attitude for any guy who stepped out. He wasn't the most talented, but he got absolutely the most out of his talent. Fantastic line-out player, fantastic rocker. Wasn't a ball handler of any. He'd slag me off for me slagging him off. But the reaction to the players around him was phenomenal, because he had an attitude that was world-class. So I think it's brilliant having players from overseas, two, three, four, if you can, and if you can afford them, well, great. But for the most part, Munster needs to be built from mostly Munster players. And it's fine taking guys from Leinster from time to time, but that can't be the model going forward, because you tend to lose your identity. And if you look at, I think, what's happened in the last 4 or 5 years, about 40% of the players that have joined Munster in that period of time are from Munster. That number isn't high enough. That needs to be 80%. Now, it may take a period of time to get there, but until such time as you drive that on, then, you know, or discuss that or have a summit over it, I don't know that anything changes at all.
Most of those players are coming from a couple of schools as well in Munster. I know a high enough proportion of players. And you see, you know, someone like Jack O'Donoghue from Waterford playing really well at the weekend as well. And is it just the case, Keith, that maybe they need to focus Munster on developing players in those counties like Waterford, like Kerry, where maybe they're not as big a rugby stronghold as Limerick or Cork, that maybe that the focus needs to be on those counties?
I don't think so, actually. I think there should be enough of focus and enough of rugby development officers and enough of focus on the wider Munster region. But we need to drive a huge amount more players through Limerick, through the Limerick schools. There have been no Limerick players in the academy with Craig Casey coming out of it. So, you know, there needs to be a drive, you know, lower, much younger, to try and get a lot of players available to play for Munster. I think that becomes one of the key parts of any business plan, actually, is not only do you get a lot more players, but you also get far more buy-in from the fans to say, well, these are one of our own, and they want to do that. And like, again, I'll say this isn't a xenophobic idea. I want to have two or three world-class players from around the world playing for Munster. Munster have always had that, you know, in the professional era, and that's what it should be. But it needs to be the right and proper blend.
So when you talk about those traditional strongholds of Munster rugby, Keith, is it a case that because of club rugby dying on the vine, that pathway has just been totally eradicated? Is it as simple as that? Can you put it down to that one issue? Because it's interesting that you use the phrase joined up thinking. That would suggest to me that actually there is enough there for them to get more out of.
I think there's an awful lot in Munster. I think there's a lot of kids in Munster. There's a huge interest in playing. I think there has to be that strength of depth, and we have to maximise it. But I'd say if you're doing it with one arm behind your back, which, like the idea of getting the clubs to work, the clubs always worked. They were essential for Munster. You know, they really were. And I know the club game has changed, and it is as if you're kind of looking back to the past. And I don't even know if this would be successful. I just think it needs to be something that we need to look at, because of all the teams, Munster's identity is, it's built around its history, it's built around its association with the clubs and the rivalry that happens between Limerick clubs and Cork clubs, and then Limerick and Cork clubs. You know, those rivalries lead to more players playing and more kids getting involved. So, look, I can't say that I have a solution for this, but I think this needs to be discussed pretty quickly, because it needed to be discussed in the past, if we're honest. But you can't change the past, but you can change the future. And you do need to sit down and have some level of conversation where you can maximise what we have. I don't think we're doing that at the moment.
When you say one hand is tied behind your back, what do you mean by that?
Well, I just don't think we're getting the best out of, if I called it the stool and the three legs of the stool, if we're not getting the best from the schools and we're not getting the best from the clubs, you know, how really do you expect Munster to improve? So, I just don't think we are getting the best. I don't know that we're using all our resources well enough.
That conversation is one that obviously needs to happen and will continue for the next little while. There'll also be a hunger for some short-term change, Keith. At what point do you think the conversation around a coaching change is going to happen over the next little while? I think there's a sense that there's value in giving this coaching ticket one more full season at least, especially since there's been a few moving parts over the last couple of seasons. But those talks intensify when you see someone like Ronan O'Gara having such a brilliant season with La Rochelle. Does that affect your thinking?
It doesn't actually, and I actually Ron Nagara is going off doing a job where he's trying to build his trade. Let him do his job. I mean, for Munster, for me, it still has to get around to an idea of a proper structure for Munster. So, a director of rugby, I know it isn't the sort of panacea, but the idea of having somebody that's there that focus is not just on Saturday, but for the next 5, 7, 10 years, that becomes very important. You know, I think that's a bigger conversation than who is your head coach, because you want to have the freedom to be able to maximize the talent you have at your disposal. And I just think that needs to happen. And so for the present coaching ticket, I have seen improvements. I do see some changes. I would like to see more. And I would like to see, I'd like to stop our preponderance of kicking the ball away. I watch an awful lot of rugby, and ever since the European Cup in the middle of last year, the kind of delayed part of it, the style of the game has changed virtually everywhere. Munster haven't changed that as quickly. And I think that let us down a little. on the weekend, and understandably, because we haven't been doing it that much. And I do believe that this is a process and it takes a period of time. So I absolutely give them another year, of course. That's their contract too. Let them get the benefit of it, and they may lose some games. That could be part of it, and that makes it really, really difficult, because when people are trying to protect their jobs, trying to look after what they're supposed to do, and their job is to try and get as many wins as possible. And at that point, Munster have done very well in the Pro 14 and have done pretty well in Munster, and yet they've been knocked out at this period of time. And there's no shame in that. I was totally disheartened after the Leinster game, because I didn't think we played at all. But I wasn't disheartened after the Toulouse game. And actually, the manner in which we played, if we build on that, I think we become a better side.
So just to round it off on Munster then, Keith, it seems that you're thinking that maybe a more defined director of rugby with a clear path being given from that position towards the entirety of Munster rugby in terms of the style of play, in terms of the direction, is what's required, rather than more granular focus on the coaches or on the individual players for the time being?
Yeah, I do believe that is what's necessary. I'm not disagreeing with that at all.
Keith, just on the remainder of the Heineken Champions Cup, and there's definitely a French flavour to the way this tournament is playing out. You know, Toulouse versus Clermont should be a cracker on Sunday. You've Bordeaux against Racing too, and Rog and co doing the business with La Rochelle. They play Sale on Saturday. So do you think there's a bit of pressure on Leinster now to deliver? But if you're the IRFU, looking at how this competition is playing out and the nature of the teams left, are you worried that the Irish game at all is remaining stagnant while the French game appears to flourish?
I think there's always ups and downs in you know, who's top of the tree at different moments in time. And that happens. Like for 3 or 4 years, it was Leinster. So I don't say you can say Leinster is stagnant. I think the Pro 14 has been pretty poor, and some of the standard has fallen away from that. I mean, look, we've had the craziest of results over the last 12 months. If you look at the manner in which Wales eked out a Six Nations victory, which is phenomenal for their ability to win those big games and ride their luck when they need to, but still have the courage of their convictions to score from pretty much anywhere, which they did do during the Six Nations. And then watch the way the Scarlets abdicated at the weekend. They were dreadful, you know, and there were a huge amount of Welsh players playing on that. And I think the IRFU has, for the most part, got pretty much everything right in the last 20 years of professionalism, that the opportunity has been both for the provinces to try and be at the top table and to win, which they have done consistently, and for Ireland then to succeed, which they've never done consistently, and in the last 15 years have done a huge amount, which has been very impressive. It just changes all the time. Look, if you're looking at it, can we compete with on the salaries in French clubs, on the value that they have in keeping superannuated Kiwis up to 35, 36, 37 years of age to play for 20 minutes off a bench and have an impact? I don't think that that's viable within Ireland. So we need to maximise what we have, and we need to play a little bit smarter. You know, we need to make certain that we are not falling into the trap of playing the large power game, that the only team really that does that in world rugby is South Africa, and they do it incredibly well, but they've giants of men and we don't. So can we go down that line? I don't think so. I think if you look at one weekend, you can say, wow, the world has changed and all the French teams are flying. But you could have said the same about Irish teams 3 or 4 years ago. So I just think we're in a cycle. And in this particular cycle, there is money in the game in France. There isn't as much money in the game in the UK. And I think actually how the game survives over the next couple of years will be incredibly interesting. I would say that in the midst of COVID, the IRFU's reaction to the lack of income that's coming into the provinces was to make certain that the provinces were looked after. And I think they've done a really good job. The British government has given loans to the English clubs, which they'll have to pay off. That's not the situation that we have in Ireland. So Look, I don't know how this is all going to shake up. We've had a very crazy 12 months, and I'm just happy that we're able to see the game on the television. I think there's something fantastic in that being able to happen, and there's a huge credit goes to all the people that have managed to stay in their bubbles and not have any transmission, really very, very limited within sport, not just rugby. So look, I think we need to look at and smile at some stages to certain things that happen, but also to have a little look and say that not everything is all bleak this week. But in these days, they're the times that you're looking to the future. You always have to look to the future, but then appreciate the good days. And if Leinster have a great opportunity at the weekend, and if they can drive that on, that's going to be a cracker of a game. Two teams that really know how to play all styles of the game. So I'm looking forward to that too.
Just on that, and just while you're speaking, it struck me the fact that this was a cracking match of the weekend. 8 tries. You're looking at on the TV at the pictures and the sun beaming down on Thomond Park, and you're thinking, what an atmosphere this game would have had there been a crowd. I'm sure you don't get used to it, but Keith, as someone lucky enough to, I guess, to be on commentary and covering these games from inside the empty stadium, how did it feel? I'm just curious as to how it felt. I know you don't get used to it, but to be at a game that you know the atmosphere, just how different it would have been with fans. So it must have been a bit of an eerie, bizarre experience.
Oh, I don't like it. I find it incredibly off-putting. Your voice is louder. I think they can hear you when you're commentating on the pitch, which is kind of disconcerting. No, I don't like it at all. It's entirely wrong. And I have to say, and I'll go through this again and again, I'm pretty stunned by some of the levels of the performances that we've seen, because the players have got used to it and they've been well able to do it. And it took a while for them to get used to it, but some of the performances have been brilliant. And I also think it takes some of the pressure off the visiting teams. So home wins are not anywhere near as guaranteed as they were in previous quarterfinals or round of 16, so whatever we had. I know there's a change this year, but the intensity that you would expect to have in Thomond Park for a French team coming there, to the baying of blood almost for a ball that's kicked in the air, like, that's missing. And I think, I'm not saying they get an easier ride out of it, but it's not as intimidating. An empty stadium, I used to describe Lansdowne Road when before it was torn down as a monument to grey, you know, when it was empty, but it pulsed with life, you know, when it was full, because it was a dreadful stadium in its last few years. It was falling apart, but full, it had a sound all of its own. Thomond Park has that, and it didn't have it at the weekend. It is eerie, it's uncomfortable. But look, it's what everybody is having to deal with at the moment. It's the least of the worries for people who are sick. So, you know, I think we just take the joy for the fact that you can see rugby players out in the field.
You were watching Harlequins Ulster as well at the weekend, Keith, just to finish up on that one. How good were Ulster?
Ulster were good. It's funny, I was interested. The commentators were calling Harlequins abject. And they weren't. They picked a second team, maybe even a third team. 5 or 6 of the players hadn't played rugby for 14 months. And they said, this is an opportunity to get them out there. They've put all their eggs in the basket of the Premiership and said they'll use the Challenge Cup to try and blood some players. It's a pretty steep learning curve when you put a load of kids who haven't played any rugby out onto a field against Ulster, who were really trying to put down a marker, and they did put down a marker. Lowry scored the most wonderful try. You know, you see a lot of guys going for a step when they get a ball in space, and he didn't. He just pinned his ears back and scored in the corner. So there was a lot of joy in the manner in which they played too, which was good.
That back three for Ulster is pretty fun to watch. Like the Ballacoon, we've spoken about quite a bit over the last couple of months, but do you see Lowry having a future in the green jersey?
Yeah, it's hard, I think, because Lowry is small. And much and all, as I bemoan the fact that we're not talking about a huge power game or having huge forwards like they have in South Africa, it's harder for the small guy. You'd like to see him get a go. So if we look at Toulouse the other day, and we talked about a lot of their big second rows that came on and made a difference, But then you've Cheslin Colby, who is tiny and is pretty remarkable. So there is always a place. So all you want is an opportunity now and to see where it goes. But my God, he was quick the other day.
Yeah,
don't give him any space anyway.
And any concern then for Leinster this week, Keith? I know we'll have plenty of build-up as the week goes on, but I know that the early signs are a week off might not help them, but surely with their squad, a few niggles and bruises will be cleared up.
Yeah, they've got a fairly big injury list of key players, which is very upsetting for them. And but they've a great squad. It's about getting a really good team on the field and having enough good guys to finish out the game at the end. So I'm looking forward to this game. It's kind of one of the joys. I sometimes don't like watching the team that I support. So. Like, I often feel as if I'm getting an ulcer watching Ireland or Munster, you know, but you can watch Leinster and say, yeah, we want them to win. We want them to have a go. And you're not that worried about it because you're not vested in it as such. I just think the manner in which they play, if they have a decent power game and are able to control enough of the game themselves, their targeting of ruck and turnover ball, which is essential for them, if they can stop Exeter with their pick and go and with their kicks in the corner, they have a very, very good chance. For an awful lot of this, it comes to stopping how Exeter play. But no, I'm looking forward to it as a game. I think they have, I still think that they have the ability to up it. Yeah. And actually, I'm disappointed for them they didn't get the game last weekend, because I think they could have needed a shock and an ability to go and up their game at that level. It just... You just give yourself fewer options when those games get called off. So it's I'd say they had a tough session over the weekend, though.
All right, Keith Wood, great stuff. Thanks a million.
Cheers, lads.
Keith Wood there on the line giving his take on Munster, the Leinster off week, and a bit on Ulster as well as they charge through to the next round of the Challenge Cup.
The OTB Podcast Network with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.